Live,
a podcast of the cinema.
Who's the host?
That would be you, Dave White. Also me, Alonzo Duralde.
You're the other host.
Yes.
Together, we're the hosts.
We are. That's what that S is all about.
I'm so sleepy.
Oh.
It's the middle of Monday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
We're a day late doing this
situation. It's a holiday weekend. I think we're allowed a Monday taping.
Any excuse.
We didn't mess up too many people's commutes today.
Any excuse is fine.
Should you be napping and not doing this podcast right now?
Yeah, I should be napping for the rest of the day and into the night.
You just want to go to bed now and pack it in.
I do. That would be the best. I think that would be the best choice for me today. For those that you ever wake up on a day and everything, the moment you wake up, everything feels wrong.
Uh-huh.
And everything's got you all like stressed out. Everything's got you irritated. Everything's got you, you know, you're worried about this or that or seven other things.
Are you having a case of the Mondays?
What I'm having right now is a cup of tea to jumpstart criticism.
Okay. Do you hate Mondays, Garfield?
No. But I do love lasagna.
There you
go. I am. Yeah, I'm just having that cranky, no good day where nothing ever seems to fit like that. It's that day.
Horrible, very bad, no good.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You
saw a good movie, though.
You didn't do anything. You didn't do anything to make it happen.
Okay.
You just have some days you just wake up and that's the mood.
Sure.
You're in the mood.
I am familiar with that phenomenon.
You're in the mood to be left alone.
Yes.
Now, and then there's like, you know, stuff you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
Got to record a podcast. Because we didn't do it yesterday because you were gone all afternoon recording a different podcast.
Yes.
You know, I got the column to write. You guys, freelancing. Freelancing is one boring, terrible little job after another.
Yeah, pretty much.
And all jobs are bad. Just because I get to work at home. I don't have President's Day off.
No. I know somebody said, oh, hope you're enjoying the holiday weekend. I was like, well,
what holiday weekend?
I have a screening today and I have we're taping a podcast, so I don't really know what that means, but thanks.
I've got two reviews to write this week. I'm not complaining about anything.
No.
It's just, there's a lot of work that's piled up inside my head.
Oh, see, now this is, you always get on my case about this.
I know.
And you're always like, you should write it down.
Oh, it's all written down.
And then that way you can attack it in an organized fashion.
It's all written down and I'm attacking it in an organized fashion.
So what you're saying is writing it down doesn't fix anything. It still stacks up in your head.
It doesn't fix.
You've been lying to me all along.
No, I have not been lying. What I'm saying is that on a day like today, when I'm already feeling sort of like, meh.
I see.
That's when everything
feels exacerbated.
Everything feels like it's towering over me.
Gotcha.
Listen. Respect my sensitive widow feelings, please.
I will. I thought you were segueing because we were going to talk about the towering inferno.
No, we're not going to talk about the towering inferno on this podcast.
Oh.
Do you remember why?
I do.
I'm going to tell everybody why right now.
Yes.
This week begins a new thing. A thing that's new. If you're a subscriber to our Patreon, then you know that for quite a long time, we were doing a feature that we would drop every once in a while called Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife.
Right. That actually predates the Patreon. We used to sell them.
It does, in fact, yeah, predate the Patreon. We used to just offer them for sale for $1.99 or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
And we would take a movie and do a commentary that would run alongside the entire running time of that film.
Yeah. You could listen to it as like a DVD commentary track where you watch the movie and listen to us, or you could just listen to it like it was a longer episode of the podcast where we just talked about one film.
And here's what I learned over time. That if people didn't necessarily care about that movie,
mm-hmm.
they never listened to it. Mm. I'm not talking about the people who bought them. The people who bought them, obviously, they listened.
Yes.
That you weren't going to spend two entire hard-earned dollars just on something you wouldn't care about. But Patreon folks would be like, oh, yeah, you guys did that thing. I just never got around to listening to it.
Right.
And I thought, these take so much work.
Yeah.
Not only do we need to, for a script, unlike the actual podcast,
mm-hmm.
to do a well, you know, prepared, you know, job on this, you have to make a script, at least, at the very least, an outline yes. of everything you want to say and when to talk about it and where it is in the film.
And talking about anything for like 90 minutes
we'd
to 2 hours.
We'd wind up going to the Academy Library to do research on films
yeah.
That we would be talking about. And
having that conversation is just hard to do.
And so that's not the important part. The important part was that the prep involved.
Yes.
Hours and hours and hours of prep.
Research. And,
yeah.
Yes.
And so we dropped the ball.
Yeah.
We just dropped the ball because the overwhelming task of making one happen became like, oh, God, when are we going to do this?
Right.
Like, when are we going to set aside, like, two entire days to research, write, and get this out into the world? I had a big idea recently.
Yes.
You can thank me for this big idea. I woke up with this big idea.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to abandon the project of Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife. But I wanted to make it something less formal.
Sure.
Something less, taxing, honestly, for us. And also something that more people would maybe want to give a shot to.
Yeah.
You know, because if you think, like, oh, I don't care about the Avengers, why would I listen to a 2+ hour commentary about it?
Right.
Or I don't care about the movie
Russian Ark.
Russian Ark. That's a really good example. Because a lot of people probably didn't care about that movie.
Yeah, or Two Days, One Night.
We are obsessed with it, you know. And I thought, you and I are home on a Friday or Saturday night, watching some old movie on the couch.
Yeah.
By the end of the work week, we're beat. We're not out running around on the town.
No. At the discos.
I'm fixing a dinner. We're sitting on the couch. We're watching something.
Yeah.
On TCM or whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought, what if those became our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife? What if they became smaller, snackier sized? What if they covered more films? What if they appeared much more often, with much more frequency? What if they were once a week, or even twice a week, or who knows how many times a week?
Sure.
What if they were regular, instead of, here's one every other month, because that's all we can handle? And
also, what if they were more bite-sized for listeners, so that even if it was a movie they didn't know
or
care about?
Snackier
size. Exactly, yeah.
So here's what's happening. We are rebooting Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife. We are refinishing it. We are restoring it. We're renovating it. I don't even know what else.
Refinishing.
We're Rush-a-shying it.
Go.
So that now, every single person who is a subscriber on Patreon, that's the other thing. Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife used to only be available to people at the $12 a month and up level.
Or something like that.
Yep. $12 and up is where you got Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife.
Okay.
Starting today, everybody gets it. If you're a $1 person, a $4 person, a $7 person, 12, 16, 20, everybody gets this.
The new ones.
Mini podcast.
Yeah.
And it starts this week. We've got two films lined up. One of them's The Towering Inferno. So we watched that Saturday. And you had never seen it.
Not all the way through. I had seen bits and pieces of it, but.
So anyway, that's what's new in Patreon land.
Yes.
Are you a Patreon subscriber? Are you a Patreon subscriber at the $1 level or the $4 level or the $7 level? Never heard a Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife? You're going to hear them now.
Mm.
They'll be so delightful. Bite-sized.
And at some point, we'll go
in the bathroom to do your favorite task. Listen to it there.
Well, okay. we'll
sit in the porch in your rocking chair. Do a little knitting for 20 minutes. That's what will happen in your ears.
At some point, we'll shoot a new welcome video and change the tiers on the Patreon site.
Yeah, that's all good. All that stuff on the page has to get changed.
Yeah, but anyway, we're just telling you now, this is a thing that's happening.
So, if you aren't a Patreon person and you want to sign up even at $1 a month now.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
You're going to get extra content.
Yep.
Because before, all the $1 people ever got was like LKRX.
Yes.
And a sticker.
Yes.
And if you haven't had your sticker yet, I need to send it to you. So let me know that you ain't got it yet. But the D. Leland White, 1964, at gmail.com. That's how you get that.
Yeah.
I'm very happy about this. I like this new idea that I had. I think it's a very good idea. More people get more things, more content in their ears.
Okay.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Oh, miss this cup of tea. It's going to do the trick. It's going to get me going again.
Are you feeling peppy?
I did not see Fantasy Island.
Nor should you.
I had 5 minutes of thinking I would. Like, I saw the trailer.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I'll check that out. That looks like sort of a Hostel kind of movie. And you know I love a Hostel.
I know you do.
Torture, murder, death, brutality.
Not so much.
What made those Hostel movies great.
I believe, isn't this a PG-13 movie?
I don't know.
I think it is.
Well, I thought it looks kind of Hostel-ish. You went up to see it. You went to that press screening.
It was my job.
I decided to let you taste the poison.
Yeesh.
Before I...
Yeah, this is PG-13.
Also,
you're not getting a Hostel.
I only could see out of one eye for the past week, so
there is that also.
Had a weird eye infection. It's better now. You're welcome. You're going to see my full beauty now.
So this movie's dumb. It is.
What happens? How is this different from the crappy TV show of the 1970s called Fantasy Island?
Well, in the crappy TV show. So the crappy TV show was always very. Very, I always call it, you should just call it O. Henry Island, because nobody really gets what they set out to get there. There's always a twist.
It's like Love Boat, but with a moral.
Kind of, yes.
Yeah.
Like they think they know what they want, but then they find out that they didn't want what they want, or they find out that really they should have wanted this other thing that they're being given instead.
Right.
You know, Ricardo Montalban played Mr. Rourke, who was always sort of like...
He ran the place.
It was all like, what's his deal? We don't know.
Hervé Villechaize was his assistant.
Named Tattoo. Yes.
He's the guy that would say, the plane.
Yes.
Yeah.
And apparently in later seasons, like, Montalban insisted that, like, Mr. Rourke be shown to have more sort of, like, powers or something.
Like mystical powers?
Yeah. So, like, you would see him throw down with Satan, as played by Roddy McDowall
this
in a red tuxedo.
This is the crucial three-year difference between you and me.
Yes. I was still watching TV on Saturday nights.
You were still young enough to be home watching TV on Saturday nights.
Yeah.
And I was old enough to know that if I were home watching TV on a Saturday night, I had failed as a teen.
Right.
Teen failure.
There's something about Saturday night. Like, it's funny, because Saturday night TV now is this dead zone. Like, no, like if a show gets sent to Saturday night, that's like, oh, you're in Siberia, basically.
Right.
Like, NBC had so little going on in their prime time that they now show Saturday Night Live at 8:30 on the West
On the
Coast.
West Coast, yeah.
Like, I don't know what the East Coast watches during prime time, but we don't get it, and no one
Like
cares.
Dateline or
Probably, yeah.
You're Locked Up in Prison Somewhere kind of
Some
show.
garbage, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, and so, like as a property to be rebooted, as a like, hey, I know that name. I could see where they could have gone somewhere with this. They don't go anywhere particularly interesting with it. It's all a little more sinister. The island itself has secrets that they feel like they have to explain to you.
Is it a magical, powerful island?
It is.
Oh.
Like, that's why there's like dead people there, like something like you could be
I
reunited with
see.
lost loves and
Got it.
whatnot,
All right. So this is a supernatural place.
Yes.
All right.
But the plot lines are pretty straightforward. Lucy Hale wants revenge on her high school bully, and Ryan Hansen and the guy from Silicon Valley, Jimmy O Yang, are stepbrothers, and they want to live that high rolling lifestyle. And this other guy, who's a cop who feels like he never lived up to his father's bravery and his mother would never let him enlist, wants to see what it's like in the army. And Maggie Q wants a do-over on her like personal life or whatever. And of course nobody gets exactly what they want, or it all blows up in their face in some horrible way or another. And then their fantasies all start sort of overlapping with each other. And then you come to find out,
Wow.
well, like people keep running into each other during things. And
Right.
so what you think are four completely discrete stories then wind up being, sort of intertwined.
Right.
I won't get into spoiler territory, but it's all dumb and it all kind of falls apart. And our good friend Jason in Nashville pointed out stuff that I was so numbed by the movie that I didn't even really think about some of the deeper implications about what this movie has to say about bullying or gay people. But
Right.
they're pretty stupid. Yeah, this is a Blumhouse movie, which I guess fits into their formula of like it's one location, and that one location in this case is like Maui or whatever. But yeah, it's dumb, and the studio did not believe in this movie. They press screened it on Thursday afternoon.
Oh, that's not
They
good.
did not show it on Thursday night at all. Like, just about everything now starts, any movie that
Are
opens
you
on a
telling me
Friday,
there were no Thursday night screenings for the public?
there were no Thursday night screenings for the
What?
public. They did
Would
not,
you, that's money you're leaving on the table.
well, I guess they were not worried about that. They started showing the press embargo lifted at Friday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time, so noon on the East Coast, which is when presumably the first shows on the East Coast would be getting out.
Right.
And yeah, the reviews have been terrible. It still managed to do okay this weekend. I'm
Right.
sure it cost 2 cents because it's Blumhouse, so it's probably already profitable, but it's dumb and it's just, yeah, it's please no sequels.
The PG-13 is all I needed to know.
Yeah.
Because, listen, if you're going to put me in a situation that is essentially hostile, only like a supernatural one,
Yeah.
I want to see Heather Matarazzo giving a full-throated, wild death performance.
You're not getting that.
I'll tell you what, in Hostel 2, she gets killed more extravagantly, more wildly, more upsettingly. You feel the commitment from her to communicate what it means to be absolutely terrified because someone has trapped you and is murdering you. Horror films rarely give you that. Horror films really rarely give you that sense of, like, what if this were happening to you? What if you were the one being chased, bound, tortured, and killed? Because they don't hire experienced actors. So she comes along in this movie, and she's just one of the victims. But holy cow, it is a scene, it is a death scene that I will always remember. It's nasty. It's ugly. It's not something you are entertained by.
Right.
Like it actually almost takes you out of the movie.
Huh.
Because mostly in horror films, when people get killed, you're like, yay! Like that. You are.
Anyway.
You're cheering on the death. Not this one.
Yeah, this
is upsetting.
This is like, it's so barely a horror movie. Like, it's really not until Act Three that it sort of starts feeling like one.
Yeah.
And it basically becomes one by suddenly having everybody get really stupid and make dumb decisions where, like, they start, oh, we're all traveling through this cave together, but let's all split up now, even though we just said we weren't going to. That kind of nonsense.
Great.
Yeah.
Hey, there's something else that's better.
What's that?
A better, like, I can't even say, hey, there's something else that's better than Fantasy Island. This movie is not just better than Fantasy Island, it's better than most everything out in theaters right now. Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Yes.
Which got a one-week
awards run.
What run in Los Angeles, maybe New York.
New York also, yes.
And it's weak in Los Angeles. It was in like a couple theaters, but not on a full schedule. Like you had to work mm-hmm. to see it in that 1 week time.
And even still, like its opening weekend had like the third highest per screen average of any French language film ever in this country.
Yeah. So now it is here in a full release. And by a full release, I mean, it's playing on like, you know,
a few hundred screens.
50 screens, 100 screens, something like that around the country. So you still, have to work to go find it.
Indeed. But you should.
But you should. It's incredible. It is set in the 18th century in France.
18th or 19th?
18th.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a film from Céline Sciamma. Who made Tomboy and who made Girlhood mm-hmm. before this. There is a young woman named Marianne. She's played by Noémie Merlant. She's an artist. She's a painter. She learned how to do it from her father. He was a painter as well. But, you know, she has the unfortunate luck of being female.
Yes.
So, you know, the art world of the time is not going to pay attention to her. So she paints portraits. She's hired by a rich lady to come to the remote location where she lives with her young daughter.
You know who the rich lady is?
Remind me, I'm blanking.
Valeria Galino.
That's right. Valeria Galino.
Yeah.
Her daughter, Eloise, played by Adele Haenel. Adele Haenel was in the Dardennes.
Hang on.
What's the name?
The Unknown Girl.
The Unknown Girl. Sorry. Thank you.
I kept thinking Girl Interrupted. I knew that wasn't it.
The Unknown Girl. She's also in BPM.
Yes.
Yeah. And she is refusing to sit for a portrait that has to be made so that she can get some rich dude to marry her.
Yeah. This is basically like when people who hire somebody to take their like dating app pictures, except she's doing this unwillingly.
Right. So Marianne is hired secretly.
Yes.
And the trick is you're actually going to be Eloise's
companion.
And you're going to like take walks on the shore and have tea and stuff with her. Like they'd hang out with her.
They'd already been through a couple of painters and it didn't work out.
Yeah. Male painters that had come along trying to paint her portrait and she wasn't having it.
Yeah.
So they start hanging out. And it's very suspicious, you know, at first in terms of, like, Eloise doesn't trust, like, who this person is or what they're doing. And little by little, they become close. And then they become lovers.
Yes.
And you get the sense from both of these women that they kind of already knew they were lesbians. They were just waiting for someone else to come along and help them out. You know?
Well, I mean, what happens also is
no
like,
one seems taken by surprise.
They're on this island sort of that's really remote. The mother goes off to travel for a few weeks. So in this house and the shore, it's just like the two of them and the maid, and they sort of almost create this kind of like this brief sort of feminist utopia, you know, commune going on, where they just get to be themselves for a while and not have to deal with the pressures of the outside world or the patriarchy or whatever.
Right.
And yes, of course they fall in love. It's breathtaking.
And I won't tell what happens after that. Stuff does happen.
Stuff happens. I want to shout out Hélène Delmer, who does the actual paintings in the film.
Uh-huh.
And her hands are used a few times when they show the painting happening. I was talking about this with Christy on Breakfast All Day. Like, I hate it so much in a movie where they get all the details right, and then suddenly somebody picks up a newspaper and it looks all fake, there's a family photograph on the wall that's clearly like badly photoshopped together.
That's
kind of
the
stuff.
Worst.
Yeah, like that just takes me right out. And in this movie, the way the paintings that the character is doing evolve and how they present Hélène, or Eloise rather, you know, like is so vital to the plot, and they so mean something to the story that's being told and how the characters are changing and their relationship is changing. That I think it's so important to the story being told.
This is a gorgeous looking movie.
Yes.
From cinematographer Claire Mathon.
Who also shot Atlantique.
Atlantics. Yep. Doesn't matter if it's day or night. Everything looks right.
And the nighttime stuff looks period appropriate. Like it is like candles.
Right. Absolutely. There is a stillness and a tension and a quiet to this film that, well, anybody who's listened to this show long enough knows. That's my jam. If you want to make me sit up and take notice in your movie, shut up. Live with some silence.
Yeah.
Have people not talk to each other for a while.
This is a topic that's going to come up again later in this episode with another movie we're talking about this week. Yeah, and like the two lead actresses are so great. And again, their faces say so much even when no one's talking.
Yeah. Particularly, I got to say, Adèle Haenel.
Yes.
Is maybe physically incapable of not serving face every time she looks at the camera.
Yeah.
There is not a moment where you don't know what's going on with her because she's showing you on her face. There's an intensity and a severity to just whatever she can do with her eyes, even.
Which is part of why everyone's finding it so difficult to do her portrait.
Yeah. There's a reason for you.
Yeah.
It has been years since I have seen a lesbian romantic drama other than Carol this perfect.
Have you seen Concussion?
You always bring that up. No, I haven't.
I'm just wondering. Because I would put those three on a key.
But can I just tell you something without, at the risk of making it sound like I don't trust you?
Uh-huh.
You're the only one talking about that movie.
That is not true. Mm-hmm. You don't know enough lesbians.
Okay. All right. Maybe I don't. I mean, I totally do. But they're
can
not
we,
talking about
Can
Concussion.
We ever know enough
There
lesbians?
Is no such thing as knowing too many lesbians. But
There, we can always
but none
know
of the
more.
lesbians in my life are going on and on about concussion.
Well, the Outfest lesbians were all about it.
I see. All right.
And it's on Netflix, so y'all have no excuse
so
for not seeing
it. I
movie.
Have no excuse to finally not watch
not
Concussion.
The, not the Will Smith
Not the Will
concussion,
Smith concussion
the
movie,
other
no.
one.
Yeah. But yeah, this is just achingly, painfully beautiful and moving, heartbreaking. Mm. There's
sweeping
so much. There's so much happening here, and so much beauty, just formal beauty, in the physical filmmaking qualities of this
the craft
film and the performances. Just everything is just good,
gorgeous.
Yeah. Also really great is the photograph.
Yes.
Why don't you talk about it?
Okay. So we open on Lakeith Stanfield, who is a New York-based journalist for a something, website, magazine? I don't know.
A publication of some sort.
A publication of some sort. He's in Louisiana researching the ongoing impact of the BP oil spill yeah. on fishermen. And he's talking to this guy and sees these photos that were taken back in the 70s and a picture of the woman who took them and becomes intrigued by the story of this fisherman and this photographer and the photographer herself. He follows a thread back to her daughter, played by Issa Rae. The photographer's recently passed away. Issa Rae is an art curator at a museum in the Bronx.
Queens.
Queens, sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. Right by the old World's Fair. Yeah. There's a beautiful shot of the heliosphere.
Sure.
Whatever that you know, that big globe thing at the World's Fair. Anyway, so as Issa Rae and Lakeith Stanfield's characters draw closer together, we learn more about Issa Rae's relationship with her mother's relationship with this guy in Louisiana. You know, so it becomes as it is a love story, but it is grounded in like the loves of the past and how they, you know, how they reverberate through to future generations. There, it's about mothers and daughters. You know, it's about a lot, and it is gorgeously shot. Like the cinematography again, it's a different kind of gorgeous than Portrait of a Lady on Fire. But like Issa Rae and Lakeith Stanfield are just shot like such movie stars all the way through, and they are such movie stars all the way through. Was I right about the coat?
I'm going to tell you, I counted the coats.
The coats?
I counted the coats.
Oh, the coats.
The first, I know what coat you swooned over at first.
That pattern.
Yeah. The very first coat that Issa Rae shows up in, when she showed up in it, I thought, oh, that's the coat I also was thinking of. It's the kind of coat that Anne Hathaway would have tried on in the Let's Dress Her Up montage.
In the Suddenly I See montage. Yeah. It's the kind of coat Diane Cannon would have worn in The Love Machine.
Also that. Yeah. But then for the rest of the movie, she never repeats a coat.
Nope.
Do you notice this?
Oh, yeah.
She has like 7 coats. And all of them are perfect. And so
this is the kind of movie that I think people are going to watch over and over again, partly for the love story, partly just for like the aspirational qualities
to live in that world.
That world, that New York, those jobs, like just everything is so glam and delicious.
She has, you know, she has a very cool job as a curator.
Yeah.
She has a very cool looking work environment. She has a gorgeous little apartment full of art. You know, do we see his apartment? I don't think
do we? I can't remember.
We see his brother and sister-in-law's apartment.
Yeah, they have like a house.
Lil Rel Howery and Tiona Paris are the brother and sister-in-law.
Yeah.
And so aside from the old-fashioned romantic drama gorgeousness, it dares to do something different with the love story.
Mm-hmm.
It dares to show you what young people with careers might or might not be willing to do for love. Always got one foot in the idea of, well, you know, this person seems nice.
But I'm married to my work.
But I'm getting this job in London, maybe.
Yeah.
So what am I supposed to do? And it goes into a place where dumb, conventional, fake problems are not allowed.
Yes. There's no BS misunderstanding.
There's no silly misunderstanding. There's no lack of communication. There's no, you know, there's no false stuff taking place.
Yeah.
There's only two people who are trying to figure out their relationship and figure out themselves. There's no big shattering revelations.
There are little ones.
There are small ones where you realize, oh, that's why this happened here and why this didn't happen here.
There are distinctly human-sized ones.
So it turns into a romantic drama that is also about larger stuff, like what are your plans versus what might life just have
throw your way. Yeah.
How do you live with the regret that you might have because of a past relationship or because you didn't get something that you needed from someone? You know, how do you manage loss if you're the one who got lost? And so it's such a complex emotional film, but it works on such a low key vibe from start to finish. I do worry a little bit about, you know, an audience's reaction to it, because I think audiences are so often hoping for some big thing to take place. And no big thing takes place here.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about this next week because you haven't seen it yet. But that's kind of the same thing and it's a thing I love about Ordinary Love.
Right.
Like, you go into a movie that's about a couple dealing with one of them getting cancer, and there are certain big, like, for your consideration moments you think you're going to get, and you don't get those.
Right. Right.
You get like, oh no, this is how human beings respond in the world as we recognize it to these different phenomena. And that's what's happening here too. The writer-director Stella Maggie, I did not see Everything, which was a YA, you know, beautiful doomed teen movie.
Okay.
But I did see Gene of the Joneses, which is a really smart comedy about this family of black women in New York City, and sort of like, you know, each of them having their own things they're trying to do beyond, you know, their kind of family unit, and trying to balance that with the obligations and responsibilities they have. And so I think she is a really empathetic storyteller. And I think she understands things on a level that isn't like big sweeping movie, you know, act three thing that's going to happen.
Right.
It's just like, no, this is my life. And then this happened and this happened. And then do I have to figure out what now and who do I risk hurting? And am I doing the right thing for me versus, you know, whatever.
Her direction is very emotionally intuitive. And she lives with her characters in a way that feels very natural.
Yes.
And unforced.
Totally.
So I'm super into this. And I am excited now to go see Gene of the Joneses, because I haven't seen that yet.
It is sadly not streaming anywhere. I was just looking for it.
But it'll be available somewhere somehow. But it's going.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I think just the two leads were both kind of a revelation to me. Like, I've enjoyed them in other things, but I've never seen Lakeith Stanfield as like a romantic leading man type. But holy crap.
Oh, these two people should be making out all the time.
Yes. They should be.
They're both gorgeous.
They should be.
And the cinematography, the thing we talk about all the time with
shooting black skin,
casts, is cinematography and black actors, and how so often, if you don't know how to light black skin, then you've made them less gorgeous.
Yeah, and Wesley,
these two are beautiful.
Stunning.
Start to finish.
Yeah, no, they
get all the good light in this movie.
They should be like solving mysteries. Like they're gorgeous.
Wesley Snipes. You want mystery solving sequels?
No, different characters.
Their own The Thin Man.
Absolutely, yes.
I wouldn't be against that.
Yeah. Wesley Snipes has this great line in Dolomite Is My Name, where he's explaining to Rudy Ray Moore about, like, you have to hire the right cinematographer. He says, white skin reflects light and black skin absorbs it.
Right.
And so, yeah, not everybody gets it right, but this is actually the same cinematographer that shot the recent Black Christmas remake.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure working with a little more time and money than he did on that movie.
Perhaps. this is a beautiful movie. And
smart.
And kind-hearted.
Yes.
In a way that leaves you feeling nice.
There are no villains in this movie.
No villains.
Yeah.
You don't need one.
Yeah.
Life doesn't have a villain jumping in your face all day, every day. Unless it's the villain that you live with in your own mind.
Unless you married your villain.
Downhill.
Oof.
Starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Will Ferrell. It is a remake of Force Majeure.
Yes.
Which is from Sweden.
Yes. Ruben Östlund.
That's right. And in the original film, upscale family, they're on their skiing vacation,
mm-hmm.
and they're at a ski resort in Europe, and there's a controlled avalanche that takes place, and that does happen.
Yeah.
They instigate avalanches, small ones.
Yeah, to clear, so it doesn't accumulate.
So they do one. And this wonderful moment in Force Majeure when you see the avalanche happening and it's getting closer and closer and closer and closer to the people at the ski lodge, and they all panic and they start to run, and the husband bolts.
Picks up his cell phone and dashes off.
And leaves the mom and the kids
right
behind. And the entire rest of the film is this quiet examination of, do I even know this person that I married?
Yeah, like you just failed the test.
Yeah, like the biggest one.
Yeah.
Like that's the what would you do question,
mm-hmm.
and you failed it.
Yeah.
So keyword here is quiet.
Yes. Force Majeure is hilarious in the most like uncomfortable way.
Right.
Because it's so much about people not saying things or not copping to things or not confronting each other about things.
Yeah.
And just how it sort of manifests itself out in these other sort of awkward, where are people standing? And what are they looking at and versus not looking at? That kind of thing. That's not what they do here.
No, this is, yeah.
This is from talented people, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Will Ferrell. I'm a fan. It is written and directed by Nat Faxon and Jim Rash, who collaborated with Alexander Payne on the Academy Award-winning script for The Descendants. And then as directors themselves, they did The Way, Way Back, which I quite liked. And they're individually funny. Like, we've seen them do Groundling stuff, even. Like, they've been around.
Yes, you've seen around them
on
TV.
Jim Rash was on Community for years. You know their faces. They do not get why Force Majeure works. Or at least if they started with basically Force Majeure, but in English, I don't know if they got studio notes to death.
They did. I wasn't there for these meetings.
You weren't? Really?
I don't know 100% that that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys are not
dumb.
These guys are not obvious people.
No.
And by that, I mean, they are not the kind of people who go for the easiest thing.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that a studio person said, why can't we have something here where they explain?
Mm.
What about some explanation? What about more talking and more explanation? What about some physical comedy?
What about a more direct confrontation?
Right.
What about another one?
And then, and that's what happens when you're thinking in terms of television.
Yeah, I suppose. That is actually very true. I hadn't thought about
that. You're not thinking in terms of cinema. You're thinking in terms of television.
Television, yeah.
And so that's, you know, that's the kind of movie you wind up with. A movie that looks like a TV show and acts like a TV show.
I mean, doesn't it? It's not shot like a TV show necessarily. I mean, it's maybe edited like a TV show, but I would say at least the cinematography, they do, and again, they're at least just doing what the first did movie as well, which is like they are shooting everything like an Alpine postcard. Like everything looks like it's, oh, look at this beautiful resort, and you know, here we are frolicking in our, you know, in our snow gear or whatnot. But you know, while amidst all of that sort of like grandeur is this like family falling apart. So we pause for a second. I discovered there was one other writer on this film, depressingly enough, Jesse Armstrong, who co-wrote or wrote Four Lions and In the Loop and is a writer on Succession.
Well, something...
something got lost.
This is people who are good and smart and funny and creative who are getting trounced upon.
Mm-hmm.
Trounced upon? Is that the right...
Sure.
Word? Okay, sure. They're getting stomped on. How about that?
Run roughshod.
From non-creatives up above them. Guaranteed. Money people are talking. In this.
I suppose. That's what's going on. Yeah. Anyway, it's a lost opportunity. But hey, Force Majeure
is on Hulu.
And on Canopy.
Yes.
So watch it there.
You should. It's fantastic.
Totally.
We
have some letters.
You want to do a...
Oh, DVD. Right.
A DVD pick? A streaming pick?
Yeah, sure. A pick? For, I don't know if it's for Black History Month per se, but this month, Kino Lorber put out a quintet of Spike Lee 90s, maybe some early Ooze movies.
Clockers,
Jungle Fever, the Son of Sam,
yeah,
Mo Better Blues,
yeah,
and the one I'm recommending, which is Crooklyn, which is still my favorite Spike Lee movie. I know I'm a weirdo, but like
you're not a weirdo. It resonates with you.
I think it is his Emmercord
for a real reason.
Yeah.
And it's immensely moving.
It is, I think, one of when we talk about movies that really sort of capture the essence of childhood. You know, you talk about films
in
like
the 1970s.
Well, in the 1970s, yeah, specifically, but I mean in general, like when you talk about like Emmercord or Hope and Glory or you know, Forbidden Games or something like that, I think this movie deserves to be in that pantheon. It was written by his sister Joy and his brother Sinkyu. And it is basically just this mostly plotless reminiscence about their family in Brooklyn in the early 1970s. And it has a walloping performance by Alfre Woodard and really great work from Delroy Lindo. And I just adore this movie.
Okay, so.
You're so excited.
When I was nine,
mm,
in between the Poseidon Adventure,
mm-hmm,
and the Towering Inferno,
mm-hmm,
okay, so Poseidon Adventure, 1972.
Yes.
Towering Inferno, 1974.
Yes.
I needed a favorite movie of 1973.
Clearly.
As a nine-year-old, and this did matter to me. And in 1973, my favorite movie was Day of the Dolphin.
One of the odder entries in the Mike Nichols filmography.
They trained a dolphin to kill the President of the United States.
Is he going to strangle him or what?
Okay, so what it's about is...
they trained a dolphin to assassinate the President of the United States.
No!
Says it all, right?
George C. Scott,
uh-huh,
is a brilliant scientist.
Okay.
Teaching dolphins to speak English.
Right. And you know who voices the dolphin?
Could happen. I forget.
The film's screenwriter, the recently departed,
Buck Henry. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, then bad guys steal the dolphins and train them to to kill the president.
By speaking English?
They put bombs on him or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. First of all, talking animals. Secondly, high suspense. Now, when you're nine, you're just thinking, oh, I guess they're going to kill the president. Like, you don't think about what that might mean.
With dolphins, okay.
But it was a wacky time.
It was.
In the 1970s, when we had a president during this film's, you know...
release.
Moment that was under siege.
Yeah.
Because he was a criminal.
Indeed. That used to matter.
It certainly did used to matter.
Yes.
Not anymore.
Nope.
Nope. But, like, this film has been hard to find for quite some time.
Have you been looking?
Every once in a while.
Okay.
Yeah. But now it's on Blu-ray.
It is. And I'm going to see it because I've never seen it.
Oh, and we're doing a linoleum knife presents knife about it. You can guarantee.
Patreon.com/linoleum knife. We also do other shows.
I cannot wait. Do we have letters?
We do. We have a couple letters.
Am I supposed to read them?
You are. And we have some 5-star reviews.
Oh, those.
Because when people leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast, we read it on the show because you're awesome. You, the listener, not you, Dave White. I mean, you're fine.
Put on my glasses.
Do that.
Tim says, hello, boys. I know you don't put much stock in the annual Academy Festival of Couture Ensembles. I usually don't watch with the rapt attention I had as a teenage movie geek, but given the chance that Parasite could win at least one of the big prizes, I watched the whole thing. In the hundreds of think pieces published this week, one theme has emerged, summed up neatly by the New York Times. Hollywood's over-reliance on white stories told by white filmmakers may finally be ebbing. I beg to differ. Not me, Tim.
Yes.
Tim begs to differ. Mm-hmm. Parasite didn't win because of its cast or origin. After all, this story could and probably will someday be easily transferred to an all-white cast set in an all-white enclave. The film has done so well because of the story itself. The three other main contenders, all quite fine and superbly done, were essentially twists on already told stories, extensions of franchises we've seen over and over. Another Joker, really? Tarantino producing a blockbuster epic in homage to classic Hollywood blockbuster epics? Yawn, The Irishman, sigh. Well, Tim, aren't you judgy?
Well, making with the takes.
Each film had brilliant moments and tugged all the right strings. Each director produced an incredible piece of work. But we've seen all these before many times, many, many times. The reason Parasite did so well is due mainly to the story it tells. Finally, a movie without superheroes, without gangsters, no marriages dissolving, no Empire waistline costumes. That was one of my problems with Parasite. No vintage fancy costuming. I'm thrilled Parasite is getting the kudos and box office it deserves, but let's not lose sight of the fact that the movie tells an engrossing story, a ripping tale, if you will, a story we've never heard before, and that, my friends, is what Hollywood is supposed to do. Thank you for all your hard work. Tim.
I would love the idea of white stories from white filmmakers being on the ebb. I very much doubt that's an immediate thing that's going to be happening, but, you know, we can dream.
You know, I'm not Korean. I'm not from Korea. I've never been to Korea. I don't know what I've missed watching Parasite that I wouldn't miss if I were Korean.
I have heard people say there are very, like, site-specific things about that movie that non-Koreans aren't getting, but I think it's a testament to the film that it's playing so well to people who don't have that working knowledge of you know, the strata of Korean society. So, like, if you do, and that's a bonus, great. But for the rest of us who are coming in as outsiders, there's still enough here for us to sort of, like, you know, dive into.
What I'm saying, what I'm trying to get at here is that in spite of the fact that I am not Korean and that I don't, you know what I'm missing, I don't want to discount I would never want to discount this film's Korean-ness
sure.
as part of what makes it great.
Right. There's an idea where once something becomes universal, it means it's no longer specific, and that's not always the case.
Right. What's happening here?
I don't know.
I'm looking at this letter, and I don't think I understand what I'm looking at.
It's a list letter, and they said you didn't have to read the descriptions under each title.
Okay, it's so long.
Well, you don't have to read the descriptions under each title. You can just read the titles, and
can we hold this letter till next week so I have a chance to read through it and decide if it needs to be chopped or read in its entirety, because it's very long.
Okay, we'll hang on to that.
Theo, Sarah, you know who you are.
We'll get back to you. Read the reviews, please.
I read these letters cold.
Yes, you
do. So I, 5-star review from Dugan. The Dugan? Dennis Dugan?
I'm thinking
director of I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
I'm going to say.
And the Grown Ups
movies. Co-star of, is that, Norman, is that you? I think not.
David and Alonzo are film critics. They're also husbands to one another. They talk about life and movies in the best way. Listen to one episode. Get hooked.
Yes, do it. Dugan says so. Thank you, Dugan.
Thank you, Dugan. Here's the other one. Boy, will this ever load? Okay. I miss them when they are gone, and I smile when they are near.
Oh.
This is from, who am I looking at this from?
Cinepunks.
Hello, Cinepunks. I know who Cinepunks is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't, but great.
This is possibly my favorite film podcast of all time. David and Alonzo are the best.
Oh.
Their insights are helpful and informative. Their dynamic is fun and warm. And the show feels like hanging out with friends, although none of my friends are this great. Sorry to your friends. I love the combination not only of their personalities, but the contrasts of their tastes. And when they have guests, it is never a disappointment. Thanks so much for being so many folks' surrogate gay uncles.
Oh, well, golly.
That's us.
Well, thank you, Cinepunks. That's very sweet.
And that's the end of this program.
It is. So, yeah, just once again, patreon.com/linoleumknife. We are introducing the new 2.0 version of Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife.
Improved.
But you can also get LKTV, a podcast of the television, Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by two film critics, and Linoleum Nights. Some of you may have accidentally gotten a Linoleum Nights in your feed. Hope you enjoy it, but do not listen to it around children if you have kids in the car. It is the show that we swear on, so just know that going in.
If you are a Patreon person, you accidentally got Linoleum Nights, even if you're not at that level.
Yeah.
And yeah, full of profanity. Cussing. Lots of it.
Yes. Don't be shocked.
That's how we really are in real life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And all the defenses come down. Check out our friends on the internet. Go over to the Critically Acclaimed Network and see what Bibbs and Whitney are up to. Check out the Schmoes Know and all the things going on at SEN. Dennis, anyone with Dennis Hensley, the comics canon, all things cozy, Sewers of Paris, Deck the Hallmark, Big Fat Gay Podcast, Criterion Cast, Fat Guys of the Movies, and Secretly Timid. And speaking of shows you should not be listening to with your children around, gay men might want to check out Fruit Bowl, or actually, no, our LGBTQ listeners might want to check out Fruit Bowl, our friend David Quantick's show. He's sitting on our sofa right now.
He's sitting right here.
And it is...
He's right behind you.
It is a fascinating series of interviews with people talking about their sexual coming of age. So, you know, again, not just
coming of age, but like everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not with the kids in the car, but otherwise fascinating stuff. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us that beautiful.
Oh, they go there too. It's dirty. It's real dirty.
It's uninhibited. Leave us that beautiful 5-star review and we will read it on the show. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, like Spotify and Google Play and CastBox and Stitcher Radio and thelounge.com. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. Check in with him at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. And drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com with any questions or comments. We appreciate you listening, and we will be back on our regular Sunday this time, I think, right? Yes.
Yeah.
That's the plan anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, enjoy the rest of your President's Day weekend, and until next time.
Goodbye.